Hi, I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There, the podcast that explores big questions through intimate stories outdoors. On this episode, what happens when you're successful but not happy? The story comes to us from a woman named Tiffany Duong. A few years ago, Tiffany was living the life. She'd finished law school, moved back to LA to work for a big law firm, and traveled as much as she could. But something didn't add up. Despite the seemingly glamorous life, Tiffany was miserable. She felt like a shell of a person, and she couldn't understand why or how she'd gotten to that point, or what to fix. And then she went on an impromptu scuba diving trip to the Galapagos Islands. At the time, it seemed like just another vacation to distract her from her angst. But something happened out there on that boat that ended up changing her entire life. I'll let Tiffany take it from here.
Okay, breathe. Almost angry, I urged myself on. You can do this, I told myself. You want to do this. You need to do this. My brow furrowed and my throat felt dry from the anticipation. Come on, Tiff, it's today or never? I shook my head and sighed out loud at the same time, not sure if I wanted to cry or scream or just hide under my desk. I looked outside my office window for distraction, stability. The skyscrapers of downtown LA were the same as they'd always been, gray, tall, looming. I imagined all the corporate suits and finance people in them, working all hours of the day in their fluorescent yellow offices, just like me. Okay, Tiff, focus. Why was this so hard? I'd already decided to quit my job last month in the Galapagos. God, to be back there again, on the boat, carefree, instead of here, freaking out and trying to find the courage and resoluteness I had there. Tiff, come on, I begged myself. If I really wanted to quit my job, which I desperately did, it had to be within the next 4 hours. Tomorrow, my boss came back from vacation. He was bossy, bordering bullying, and I knew I didn't have the courage to stand my ground against him and quit tomorrow. So it was today or never. Never. The idea of it made me wince. But the devil's advocate in my head prodded, "Do you really have to quit? Are you really going to do this? Are you crazy? Maybe I should just get back to work?" I shook my head, no. Not today. Instead, I went to my computer and opened up Spotify. Rachel Platten's fight song. The last few days, as I'd settled on doing that crazy thing and quitting my job without a next step, this cheesy anthem had saved me. This is my fight song. Take back my life song. Prove I'm all right song. I let the cheerleader positive lyrics flood out all of the what-ifs that had begun to stir up clouds of doubt within me. Okay, this is really happening. For the first time ever, I felt my resolve dig its heels into the carpet of my office and push back. Never was no longer an option. To understand how I ended up here, let's rewind half a year. I was, of course, in that same office, working yet another late night. It'd been a crappy quarter full of these all-nighters, alone in my cold office, and I'd needed a vacation, badly. I was a mid-level associate at a top law firm. What that means, in practical terms, is that I'd learned to suffer. Well, I could execute perfection in minute details to make someone else's dreams come true. I'd work sometimes 18 hours a day, without meals, sleep, or seeing the sun, to close deals and to make a ton of money for other people. I'd learned to feel good and justified in accepting a big paycheck for working so much. People, my friends, family, and even me myself told me it was a great job that everyone wanted. Think about the pay and security, all the cutting-edge stuff you're working on. Come on, it can't be that bad. And so I kept going for 6 years. Every morning, it was a fight to get up, get dressed, and get to work. The reward for finishing an assignment early was more work. It felt endless, toxic, stagnant. To trick myself into working so much, I had to numb myself from the reality that I didn't even know myself anymore. When my mind would wander, I'd imagine my soul, my inner essence, as a translucent milky stone. And every day, just to get through that day's mundane and or insane shitstorms, I'd then imagine taking a chisel and chipping off bits of my precious soul stone. This was the price to pay for staying in this great job that was killing me. With each chip, I'd hope, maybe there'll be enough left by the time I leave this job to still be happy, to still be me. Some days were worse. We'd get scolded for not making hours or told to cancel our plans to close super important deals. Sometimes, I'd have to chip off entire corners from my soul to tell my disappointed family and friends that I couldn't join them. It hurt to do it, but I didn't have a choice. This was my job. I'd gone to college and law school for 7 years to get this job, to be right here. And so many people wanted this job, would kill for it. I was one of the lucky ones. So chip away, Tiff, stop whining, get back to work. I numbed myself during the workday and crammed as many happy hours, shopping trips, and weekend getaways into my precious moments off as was humanly possible, desperate to feel alive again. That was my big law life. Work hard, play hard, get paid the big bucks. Find ways not to feel these feelings long enough to convince myself that life was good. Eat out all the time because who has time for groceries and cooking? Miss mom's birthday and family vacations, but send something nice to stand in my place. Or bring my laptop everywhere and just never stop working. During those law firm years, every time I'd toy with the idea of quitting, that risk-averse bastard that lived in my head would start up. But what will you do? What do you even like? And you're 31? You know that, right? You're gonna start over in a new field that you know nothing about, going against 21-year-olds, fresh, eager kids. Can you handle that? Do you have the stamina? Fear-stricken, I'd pick up the chisel and get back to work, the inertia of my life too overwhelming to overthrow. Back to that late night in my office at the end of 2014. There I was, waiting for a 300-page contract to print at 2 a.m. I opened an email. It was a flyer for a scuba diving trip to the Galapagos. I considered it for fun. I'd loved the few dives I'd already done as one of the many activities I'd tried during my time off, and the Galapagos was the top thing on my bucket list. I pondered some more. I'd never dove outside of California before, and liveaboards are supposedly the way to dive. Fuck it, I said to myself. Let's go. I replied to the email, signing up for the trip and asking where to send my 3700 before I could change my mind. Like so many times before, I had overworked myself and was now buying distractions to make myself feel better. Fast forward to June 2015, and I found myself on a boat sailing and scuba diving the Galapagos Islands. As our ship cut across the turquoise sea, I breathed in the warm, tropical air. I closed my eyes, letting it fill my lungs. This was nice. I sat there on the lawn chair at the front of the sun deck in silence, taking it all in. I was in the Galapagos. I couldn't believe it. The next day, we started diving. Our plan for the week included many kinds of dives I'd never done before, with more challenging conditions requiring more skills. This was what I was here for, but still, I was nervous. The idea of blue dives, in particular, scared me. In scuba diving, a blue dive is when you swim into the blue, away from shore and into wide open ocean. It requires you to let go of the anchors and rocks that keep you grounded. You float in the water column with no tethers and no references on any side of you, totally and completely at the whim of the currents. Breathing heavily into my scuba regulator, I started talking to myself on our first blue dive. "Tiff, let go," I told myself. I watched everyone else swim away, but my fears locked me into place. "Now, Tiff," I scolded myself. "Everyone is leaving. They're looking for whale sharks out there in the blue." My fingers remained death-gripped onto the rocks. As I tried to focus my eyes on the vast blueness in front of me, my heart beat so intensely I thought it was going to burst. I just couldn't let go. There was nothing to hold on to out there. No rocks, no shore, no benchmarks, no safety nets. Just blue. The group was almost out of reach now. Fed up, I gave myself one last shot. "Ugh, Tiff, this is what you came for. Go, let go." "Ah!" I screamed into my regulator as I tentatively opened up my fingers. I felt a cool rush of water as the current took me up and out. Holy crap, no turning back now. As we got further from the shore, I lost sight of my little rock perch. I stopped looking back, actually. Excitement and wonder had replaced all my fear. "This isn't scary. This is amazing. Bring on the whale sharks. We're looking for the biggest fish in the sea." The excitement of the search and of being so small in such a vast place felt freeing. I'd never been so unanchored before. The blood flowed through my veins, and my worries from a few minutes ago floated away with my bubbles. I felt so very alive. We finished our dive, and even though we didn't find whale sharks, I was hooked. I wanted to do another blue dive to keep exploring. The promise of something special in that vast nothingness called to me to find it. That night, I couldn't sleep. The adrenaline still coursed through my veins. This was nothing like diving I'd done before. At Catalina Island, I just followed my instructor around to regular, safe spots. It was fun and beautiful being underwater, but there was no sense of wild adventure. Here, in these Galapagos currents, there was no one to blindly follow around, so I was forced to face my fears and the open water. It was invigorating in a way I'd never felt before, relying on just myself. The thoughts and emotions and aliveness swirled in my head and kept me awake. What was this that I was feeling? I went up to the top deck with my comforter. The salty sea air whipped at my face, and I felt almost embraced by the warm night. As the boat lapped through the waves, very bright, distinct little sparkles glimmered at the water's surface. Bioluminescence! They mirrored the southern hemisphere stars up above. The stars really do look different on the other side of the equator. And there were so many of them, blanketing the endless sky. It was like being in a planetarium. I stared at the glowing water meeting the twinkling skies, and as if it wasn't magic enough already, shooting stars passed overhead. Incredulous, I just kept staring. I felt high on life. What was this place?
Hey, it's Willow. We'll get back to the story in just a moment. But first, a word from our sponsor. Support for Out There comes from The Great Courses, letting you learn for the pure pleasure of learning. The Great Courses are college-level classes that you can take even if you're not enrolled in an academic institution. They're taught by experts who are passionate about sharing their knowledge, and they're available online or in digital format. There's no homework, no exams, just learning for the fun of it. One of the courses they thought Out There listeners would particularly enjoy is Fundamentals of Photography. It's taught by a National Geographic photographer, and it teaches you how to take gorgeous photos regardless of what camera you're using. For a limited time only, they have a special deal for Out There listeners. You can purchase Fundamentals of Photography for just $9.99, which is over $200 in savings. Or, if photography isn't quite your thing, you can also sign up for a free trial of The Great Courses Plus, which lets you stream any of their courses. Both of these options are available for a limited time only. To take advantage of them, go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/outthere. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/outthere. And of course, we have a link to it on our website as well. And now, back to the story.
The rest of the trip continued with that same magical feeling. During the days, we dove and explored. Everything I saw and did blew my mind. I floated alongside 100-year-old sea turtles and finished my safety stops in the middle of perfect circles of steel pompano fish. The stone mountains jutted out of the sapphire seas, and we were so isolated that it felt like we were going back to a prehistoric time. I watched frigate birds fly around the islands and pictured pterodactyls doing the same thing, circling and squawking around these magic isles millennia ago. Each evening, I went back up on deck. I breathed in every sunset. They filled me with a peace and happiness that was as unfamiliar as it was reassuring. I spent every free moment right there. I even slept on the lawn chairs instead of in my cabin, unable to stop staring at the stars and unwilling to not feel the breeze on my face. Everything in my life up to that point had taught me to value power, positions, spending, and stability. There isn't time in that kind of life for sunsets and starry nights. And yet, somehow, there I was, standing at the bow of this luxury yacht in the middle of nowhere paradise. And to think, I just booked it on a whim because I was sick of reading contracts one night. As we cruised from island to island, the rocking of the seas would sometimes wake me from my sleep. I'd go to the bow of the boat and stand there, eyes closed, arms out, breathing deeply. The wind and water danced around me, and I knew deep inside that I'd never forget these moments. The sheer perfection of it all, of floating on a small yacht in the middle of nowhere, listening to ocean gulls call in the night, created a feeling in me that I hadn't felt in a long time. Bliss. I'd come on this trip alone, and that ended up being the biggest blessing of all. With nothing connecting me to my real life other than my name, I arrived to these remote islands as a blank slate. I was literally and figuratively as far as I could be from the life I'd created for myself, from the life that I now realized I had trapped myself into. This newfound distance freed me from the obligations, expectations, and fears that had numbed me and allowed my inner neglected self to come out of hiding. Thinking back to those days, I actually see my inner self emerging from the shadows as an entirely separate person from my body. She, this forgotten, wild adventurer, fell asleep on the deck with sunshine in her face and sea breeze running through her hair. She stayed up laughing with strangers turned friends in the hot tub. She challenged herself on each dive, questioning who she was and seeing who might emerge from the depths of the sea. She stood in awe every single night. She explored these foreign lands and undiscovered parts of herself. She was wild and she was happy. And then, just like that, it hit me. She was me. The real me. The one who dives with sharks, who prioritizes experiences over accomplishments, who loves her life. Going so far away from everything I knew allowed me to let go of the rocks in my life, to fully disconnect for the first time ever. At that point, I had no other reality, not work, not home, not friends, not family. Nothing else existed for me for that entire week. Only this boat, these people, diving, waking up with adventure and falling asleep rocked by the waves. When I thought about it, I couldn't believe I'd been spending my 80 to 120 working hours a week trying to feel numb, trying to not feel alive. I got a more complete picture of who I was, and I had to admit, for the first time, that I didn't like the life I'd chosen. On one of our last nights on the boat, we passed an active volcano, spewing lava into the night as dolphins surfed our boat waves. I thought, my God, I'm happy. I am so damn happy. Right here, right now. Waves of warmth held me there, and I felt whole, complete, and free. I realized I hadn't felt that happy and at peace within myself for the last decade. I quietly resolved to change that. Almost in tears from the realization, I promised myself I wouldn't go back to that life. It stung to get off the boat at the end of the week, to go back home. I didn't want to acknowledge that there was any other reality for me other than what I had felt that week, because it felt so much more real than my safe, conventional life. That life, and the idea of going back to it, simultaneously felt like a faint memory and an imminent threat. I considered skipping my flight and getting right back on the boat for the next trip out to get back to the magic. I didn't want to lose this. When we landed at LAX, I felt uneasy, lost. How was it? A boat with strangers, in a place I'd never been before, felt so strongly home that it hurt to leave. And yet here in LA, where all my friends and family were, where I'd made my life for the past 10 years, I now felt absurd, forced, almost like a crushing prison. I knew something had to change. Over the next few weeks, I decided to quit. The more I analyzed myself, the more it became painfully clear that I'd never taken the time to figure out what work called to me. Instead, I had looked to others for suggestions and then validation that I was becoming someone they approved of. And I had succeeded. Only now, I realized I didn't share their definition of a successful life. No, I wanted something different for myself. I wanted to live slower, wake up with the sun, and feel alive in my own skin. I wanted to do work that invigorated me as much as I'd felt on the bow of that boat. I wanted, for the first time ever, to choose my own life. Back in my office, 1 month after my Galapagos trip, I played Rachel Platten. This is my fight song. Take back my life song. Prove I'm all right song, Rachel sang. Time to let go of the old rocks in my life and trust the currents to bring me where I'm meant to be, towards the big magic. I could see now that my job at the law firm was the devil I knew, and that staying seemed less scary than the vast unknown blue. But the blue was where the magic was. It was time to let go and define my own life. I turned the volume way up. My power's turned on, Rachel belted. Starting right now, I'll be strong. Screaming along, crying, I told myself, I'm brave, I'm strong, I'm courageous, and I deserve better than this. I deserve a life I love. I opened up a quote I'd saved for this exact moment to hold myself accountable. Do something today that your future self will thank you for. I read it out loud, my nerves finally steadying. Conviction, tears, and adrenaline swirled around inside me. I took a deep breath and I walked to the managing partner's office next door. Bob, do you have a moment? I said. Minutes and a bunch of tears later, it was done. The dream nightmare I'd imagined and hoped for and dreaded for 6 years was done. Quitting my career and the life I'd lived for 31 years felt like the hardest thing I'd ever chosen to do. Utterly spent, I packed up my purse and left for good. Now, 3 years later, I look back at those pivotal moments in the currents of the sea, and I see how they saved me. I'm grateful every day for what has come since, and don't regret the decision to quit ever. I feel more alive, resilient, and authentically me than I've ever before. Since letting go of my stagnant cubicle life, I've followed the winds and currents in search of my own something magic out there, exploring, trying, failing, and learning. I moved to Singapore, Rio de Janeiro, and the Amazon rainforest. I trained with Al Gore in climate activism, published my writings, and joined a marine advocacy nonprofit. My work in this arena resonates deeply with me, helping to save the ocean that gave me so much of myself back. I still don't have solid answers, but I've learned to trust in the unknown and to take wild bets on myself. I lean into my fears, the uncertainty reminding me that I'm alive and I'm real. I've got just this one life, and I'm determined to keep creating a life I don't need a vacation from. On a recent dive, a friend who I'd met on that momentous Galapagos trip shared his observations with me. "You were alone a lot on that trip," he said. "You were journaling all the time. It felt like you were searching for something." I laughed because he was right. "Yeah, I was," I answered. "Me. I was searching for me." I smiled, knowing without a doubt that I'd finally found myself and that that was all I'd ever need.
That was Tiffany Duong. She does ocean conservation work and dives as much as she can. The bow of a boat is her favorite place to be, and when she's out on a trip, she still sleeps up on the deck. Some of the sound effects we used in this piece come from Martin Ertman, and a huge thank you to Sarah Hosseini for recording Tiffany's narration. Before you go, I have two pieces of exciting news to share. The first is that we're looking for a few listeners to become the first ever Out There ambassadors. A lot of times, podcasting feels like a one-way street, where we make content and you consume it, and that's kind of the end of the story, which is sort of sad. It's been my dream for a long time to create a real community amongst Out There listeners. A community where we can get to know each other and support each other and have meaningful conversations, where we can think about life's big questions together and talk about solutions to our problems. That's where the ambassadors come in. We're looking for two or three listeners to come on board and help us build this community and broaden the show's reach while we're at it. We want people who are excited about sharing their own stories and sparking discussions related to Out There, whether that's through social media, through blogs, through in-person events, you name it. We are all ears. This brings me to the second piece of exciting news, which is that we have a new team member who's heading up the ambassador program. Her name is Laura Johnston, and I have to say, her resume makes me a little jealous. Laura has thru-hiked the Appalachian Trail and the Pacific Crest Trail. She's served as a trail correspondent for another podcast, which we'll talk about in a minute, and she's done conservation work around the globe. The ambassador program was actually her idea, and we'll talk about that in a moment, but first I wanted to back up a little, because Laura's own story is pretty lovely, and her decision to do her first thru-hike is something I think many of us can learn from. It all started because she got her undergrad degree at Virginia Tech, which is in a gorgeous corner of the state, really close to a section of the Appalachian Trail.
At the time, I had gotten into hiking purely as a day hiker and would go out to certain sections there, like McAfee Knob and Dragon's Tooth, that are these very iconic points. And, you know, when I first started hiking in college down there, I thought, maybe someday that'd be cool to actually hike this whole thing. But in reality, you know, saying that and knowing actually what it meant were very different things for me, because I didn't grow up in a backpacking family and I didn't know anybody at the time who had thru-hiked the whole thing. But over time, I met some people who had, and I got into a career in conservation. And of course, if you enjoy spending time outside, but you're working also to preserve the environment, then the two become very intertwined and you get more excited about spending more time outdoors, both to learn and for fun. And then I just got to this point where I decided, you know, the timing is right. I'd recently gotten back on the Appalachian Trail and done a few sections, including up to the final point in the northernmost part of the trail, Mount Katahdin. And I just decided, you know, your health is good. You don't have any debt right now. The responsibilities in your life are slim. And so, and my parent was in good health. And so I figured, okay, like sometimes you have to both recognize when you want to do something, but then also when you have the window to do them. And of course, once I got out there, I realized there were people from all walks of life and with all sorts of responsibilities that, you know, rearranged their lives to be able to do them. But I do think that was important, where both I had the personal desire, but also a little bit of the enabling conditions to be able to do it when I did.
I love that. How did you, okay, so you have a trail name. How did you get your trail name?
Yes, my trail name is Hey Girl. Like, hey, how you doing? What's up, girl? And that is how I got it. It's, you know, a tradition on a lot of these long trails to get a trail name or a nickname if and when something kind of funny or memorable or even just characteristically you comes up. And so that's how that came about, because for years I've been in the habit of saying that to all my girlfriends, in person, on the phone, in emails, in texts, whatever.
I feel like you've even said that to me in emails.
I probably did. And at the beginning of the AT, I was hiking with two guys, and I think they just got used to hearing me say that to women that passed. And now I joke, I don't know if they just wanted to quiet me from saying it every 5 minutes or if it just seemed fitting, but I really like it. And it always, people seem to have a fun way of saying it to me. So it can be everything from, hey girl, to hey girl, hey girl. it's fun. I like it.
I love that. Okay. So, so you were a so-called trail correspondent for Sounds of the Trail, which, for listeners who might not know, is a podcast about trail life. So what did that mean? What is a trail correspondent? How did you get to be one? And what did that entail doing?
Yeah, Sounds of the Trail was a podcast about through hiking, so hiking long distance trails end to end. And I got involved with Sounds of the Trail because first I was a listener to their first season, and Gizmo is the girl who came up with, created, produced, and is basically the brainchild and the leader of this podcast. And she had been a thru-hiker herself of the PCT, the Pacific Crest Trail, and then decided when she came home that she would start this podcast. And for the first season, I listened and, you know, was pretty naive to actually what everything entailed. At the same time, I was getting ready for the Appalachian Trail. Then I was listening to her podcast both to get excited and to learn from all these other people that were actually out there at the time on the trails talking about all sorts of things. And I loved it. And it was really entertaining, informative. And I then jumped at the chance at the end of the season when she publicized the opportunity for the next season's correspondence. And I was going to be going out on the AT. And I love asking other people questions about themselves and their experiences. I've always been curious and like to listen to other people talk about their lives or what's going on in them. And I thought, one, it would be fun to do that, but two, it would be a really cool, impactful way to build connections and friendships with people around me. So, you know, very amateurly, I recorded my application on my iPhone, no experience known, sent it in and crossed my fingers, and I was selected.
Did you feel like it changed your experience on the trail, like while you were hiking? I mean, I certainly noticed that if I'm out and, you know, doing something, and I know that there's going to be a story that's going to come out of it, it changes the dynamic. It suddenly becomes, and for me, it becomes less fun usually because it feels like work, which I'm gathering was probably not the case for you. But I'm curious how it changed your experience, like while you were out hiking, the fact that you were also documenting it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say overall the experience enhanced my time on both trails, and that's for a couple different reasons. First, it reminded me to be aware and observant, because, you know, as opposed to just going out on a day hike for a few hours, if you're through hiking day in and day out, your hiking and your experience and your view, all it is the outdoors. And so even though you might think that you're always switched on and you're always taking it in, there are moments or even hours where sometimes you can kind of zone in and out. And being a part of the podcast reminded me to be checking in and always be kind of noticing whether it was what was going on with the terrain, or what were people feeling, or how is this person unique from the last. So I liked that, where it kind of encouraged me to always be present. And, you know, I'm not going to say that that happened all the time, because of course there were moments where I was also probably checked out too, but I liked it because it taught me to do that. But then it also taught me to be present actually in what I was thinking and observing and what others were saying. You know, whether it was walking through a burn area or noticing if something on my mind was either heavy or positive or weighing on my mind, then it was like actually noticing it. But then I also was able to really notice that in other people and see, okay, this is not just somebody who I'm going to say hi to and then, you know, keep on walking. A lot of times I would think, you know, I've really developed a friendship or a good interaction with this person. They would be a great person to share their story on the podcast. So I think in that way it was good, because it was just an extra reminder to be present. And even sometimes when things weren't pleasant, to think, okay, like, this is a really good thing to share with other people.
So I wanted to move on to talk a little bit about the new ambassador program that we're starting. And this was actually your idea, and kind of grew out of an ambassador program that you took part in while you were through hiking the Pacific Crest Trail. So I was hoping maybe you could talk a little bit about how that program worked and what drew you to want to participate in it.
I was a part of the Pacific Crest Trail's P3 program, and that stood for Promote, Protect, and Preserve. And this was an inaugural program they started in 2017 when I thru-hiked. And it was a way and a goal to just kind of organically get hikers to share their photos, their blogs, their storytelling, or whatever medium and talents they had to encourage those ideas about the PCT. So I, at the time, had planned to do the podcast, and I was going to share things on social media and write blogs, and that was going to be my way of promoting, preserving, and protecting the trail while I thru-hiked. But there were 9 other people who were going to do the same thing as me, and they came from all sorts of backgrounds. There was a girl who was a physician's assistant, a musician, a veteran, a professional photographer. So it was really cool. A lot of people who had different interests and professions. But it was supposed to be something where we, you know, the Pacific Crest Trail Association said, hey, no pressure, just share these things, tag them on social media, encourage these ideas when you're on the trail as well, maybe chat to people about the ideas. And ultimately, I think for myself, what was really interesting was kind of like recording interviews for the podcast. It encouraged me to be thinking about promote, protect, and preserve the trail on a continual basis. And that wasn't always easy. I mean, there's ideas like leave no trace that come into that. And sometimes if I was camping or hiking with people that weren't exactly following leave no trace, you know, how do you talk about that? And I don't want to be somebody who is chastising people for not following things, but how do you also start conversations with folks to kind of bring up these issues? Or
So how did you do that?
Yeah, it was, I mean, sometimes I think I did it well. Sometimes I think I thought about it and I didn't, you know, do maybe what somebody else would have done. But on a couple occasions, I remember interviewing people for the podcast and asking them about the idea of promoting and protecting the trail, but asking them about if they would do anything after, because that's a big deal with these trails, right? Like, you can hike them, but they rely on us to either give money or to do trail maintenance or to give back in some way so they live in perpetuity. And I asked one guy who was both a forester and a wildland firefighter if he thought he would do anything after hiking the trail. And he said, no, I don't think so. Like, why? What would I do? And I thought about it and I thought, okay, like, I don't want to, you know, evangelize or say, hey, like, definitely join the PCTA or, you know, give back in some way or share your stories or do local trail maintenance. You know, you don't want to tell people that, but we kind of then had a conversation, which was just kind of sharing ideas that I had learned over time of ways that you can give back. And sometimes it was that it was just knowing and learning that it's protecting, promoting, and preserving the trail isn't always just about telling people things they can do. It's kind of asking them and having them come up with the ideas because maybe they hadn't considered it.
So we will be picking a few out there listeners to become ambassadors for this podcast. And, you know, we're modeling it a little bit loosely on the P3 program that you were a part of. But of course, it'll be a bit different for us. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about what this program will look like. And since this was kind of your baby, Laura, do you want to just talk a little bit about sort of how what you're envisioning here?
Yeah, of course. We want to have people that are excited about the outdoors and excited about storytelling in the outdoors. And you don't have to be, you know, a professional storyteller. You don't have to be an amazing, well-known athlete. Mostly we want people that are enthusiastic, that are interested, and that just think that they want to play a role as being an ambassador for the show. And, you know, who knows? Maybe you're somebody who has a budding interest in radio. Maybe you're somebody who has an existing career in doing marketing or ambassadorship, but you don't have to be any of those things. Ultimately, you're just somebody who is passionate about the outdoors, is passionate about connecting stories on out there with new or existing listeners, and you're somebody who is already jazzed by listening to all of this.
So thinking through this, and maybe going back to your experience as an ambassador on the PCT, why should people apply? Like, what's in it for them? Why will this be fun and exciting?
First, it brings you closer to a community of like-minded people that love being outside or that are interested in being outside and that want to be involved in the conversations around that. You know, there's nothing better than being among your tribe, but also bringing more people into what you know is a great space and a great community. So it's an opportunity for you to feel like you're a part of an excited, enthusiastic, and kind of reflective community. It's also an opportunity for you to develop your voice and your creative talents. You could be writing, you could be doing things on social media, you could be a photographer doing voice stuff. So it's an opportunity for you to share your talent, but also to develop that talent. And maybe most importantly, an opportunity for you to be an influencer and a part of advocating for something you care about and that you maybe want to be creative around. There's so many of you out there that listen and so many people that you know you could bring into this conversation in this community. And like any successful conversation, it takes more voices and it takes new voices sometimes. So we want you to be a part of that.
thank you, Laura, for coming and talking today. And I'm so excited to have you as on the show. I'm really excited about all of this.
Thanks, Willow. I'm super pumped to be involved and just the opportunity to work with you and anybody who joins us. This is going to be a great and really fun experience.
Again, that was Laura Johnston, or Hey Girl, who's heading up our new ambassador program. If you're interested in applying to become an Out There ambassador, head over to our website, outtherepodcast.com. We're looking for folks who can commit to sharing content related to Out There on social media or other outlets at least once a week for 3 months, and who can get others excited about joining the community. As we mentioned, you do not have to be a superstar athlete or on the cover of an outdoor magazine. You just need to be creative and enthusiastic and excited about joining the Out There family. Applications are due November 8th, and again, you can find all the info on our website. It's time now for Community Classifieds. Our classified section is a way for all of you to let each other know about events, books, products, etc. that you think the Out There community would enjoy. Today's classified ad comes to us from Metolius Basin Institute, healing nature one person at a time through empowering you to let go of what no longer serves you and discover your own true purpose in life. The Institute specializes in transformational treks to Nepal, focusing on themes such as false summits and embracing masculinity in the modern world. They also offer nature-connected coaching sessions. To learn more, head to metoliusbasininstitute.com. That's M-E-T-O-L-I-U-S basininstitute.com. If you'd like to take out a classified ad of your own, just head over to our website, outtherepodcast.com, and click Contact. There's a super easy form to fill out, and as soon as we hear from you, we'll be in touch about all the details. That's it for this episode. Our marketing and business development director is Alex Egerking. Our theme music was written by Jared Arnold, and Laura Johnston is head of our new ambassador program. Have a beautiful day, be bold, go outside, and find your dreams.